And for the recording record, the next meeting is the board with NCSG starting at 15:30 on Tuesday.
Are you ready to go? Okay, could we get started, please? Great, thank you. My name is Robin Gross, and I'm the chair of the Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group, and this is the meeting of the members of the Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group and the members of the ICANN Board of Directors. So thank you very much for having us. We appreciate it. And we came up with a list of four, and if we can possibly add a fifth topic to the agenda, we'd really appreciate that. And the four topics that we suggested was protecting the bottom-up multi-stakeholder model, and the who is privacy issue, and new GTLDs and registrant rights, and human rights and ICANN policy development. So you could sort of see what our primary concerns are and what are the issues that we wanted to raise with the Board of Directors. So if we can get started with our first topic, I'm going to ask Avery if she could kick it off and get us. Oh, Ray, yes, I'm sorry.
I just need clarification. You have the word who is up there. Are you talking about the current system? If not, would you please change that to the next generation of directory services? It's an entirely different topic.
Thank you. Okay. Avery, did you want to kick off the discussion on protecting the bottom-up multi-stakeholder model?
Sure. I think I was sort of struck almost speechless on the who is issue. On the bottom-up multi-stakeholderism versus ICANN staff board unilateralism. Now, first of all, I was asked not to use – actually, we were asked perhaps we shouldn't use the word unilateralism because we might offend the board and offend the staff. At which point they decided to ask me to be the one to introduce it, because why not? What has seemed to be a problem, or rather a progression over the years, starting a while back with a sort of what seemed like a peremptory decision by board and staff. And, of course, it's always hard to know where the line is drawn between board and staff on any of these things. With the first issue of, you know, the one of the versions of the application guidebook showing up with thick who is required for all new GTLDs, there had never been a policy process on that one. Then there was the trademark clearinghouse. There had never been a policy process. The changes to the RA, the changes to the RAA, one can argue whether that gets a policy process or not, but there seems to be a progression of changes being made by the board and staff together. As I say, we can only assume that it is the board and staff making these decisions together that seem to not involve the rest of us in a policy decision. We may get to comment at the end of the day, but even then it's hard to be sure that those comments really figure into things because often the decision is hardened before the end of the comment period. The decision seems to be hardened before a report comes out that analyzes the answers and the responses to all the comments that come in. And in fact, sometimes I'm not even sure we do get a detailed response to the comments that come in about these new policy issues. I understand that there's some issue of where does an issue go from being primarily policy to primarily implementation, and we'll be talking about that later. But at the moment, it seems that there are issues that are unquestionably policy issues that are being treated as pure implementation issues, and it seems to be withering the multi-stakeholder nature of our enterprise. So that has seemed like a real issue to us, and of course it's been an issue among others in the GNSO, but you know, in terms of our concerns, it becomes difficult to get our concerns for privacy, for the various freedoms in when decisions are already made and there's no policy time to talk about it. So I think that's my introduction to that first issue.
Great. Thank you very much, Avery. Do we have any responses, reactions, or comments, particularly from the board or really from anyone? This is an open discussion.
Ray.
First of all, Avery, I would tend to agree with you in certain areas and stuff like that where things have happened that probably should have been referred to a policy process, should have been developed as policy. I agreed with you at the time. I did say so in some regards, but that's neither here nor there. That's happened. With regards to implementation and policy, just because the policy is done, implementation can't be done in a vacuum. There is a responsibility that has to occur where the policy makers, i.e. the community, because they are the policy makers, do have to exercise a responsibility with regards to implementation and find good ways of taking on the implementation. In other words, implementation generally takes the form of processes and procedures. And if you're not satisfied with the process or procedure that's been developed, then there needs to be a dialogue that starts out in that as well. Because in the end, a lot of transparency comes from policy, from procedures and processes. That's how it's shown. So, and also, there's also a responsibility to comment, and this is probably one of the better forms to do it in, to comment on the way something, that once there is a process, the way it's being followed or not being followed. And so you're perfectly right in saying everything you said, and you have a lot of empathy from me. I've said this several times this week already, that the entire community has got to be ready to accept the fact that if something takes a policy to be done to do it, then programmatically you have to be willing to accept the fact that you may have to stop it, you may have to delay it, and so on. And so, of course, that's always the golden opportunity for an obstructionist to stop a program. But responsible policymakers will do that. And so I think that it's incumbent in any policy discussion to be willing to compromise. Never compromise your principles, but there are a lot of compromises I've seen that could be made that don't get made because people start protecting themselves. And so I think a little bit more open dialogue in the policy process helps things forward and does away with stalemates. So in the end, I really agree with a lot of what you said in principle. I don't necessarily want to go into any particulars because in my mind, what's done is done. Let's learn and let's move forward and get something done the right way.
Thank you.
I just wanted to comment. Thank Avery. You gave a pretty good general look at this process, and I want to make first. I'd just like to say support all of the things Avery said, and she's mentioned a lot of different processes. This is both the issues with the multi-stakeholder model, and also with a lot of things and both in principle and in the application, where the things getting filtered through. Staff comment in a way that we're beginning to find losers the original multi-stakeholder view. I'd like to focus on one specific issue just to illustrate how the problem seems to have reached a sort of a level, which is the straw man solution and the trademark clearinghouse. You'll hear a bit more about what is being called the TM plus, the trademark plus 50. The recommendation for the domain labels previously abused registered. I'm looking at the Strawman Solution memo with the 3rd of December 2012, and it says straight out, that this process... Actually, I'm probably looking at the wrong memo, sorry. I'm looking at one from... but the issue here is that the GNSO clearly identified some of the proposals as something that needed to be discussed by the GNSO as policy. Then the ALAC also agreed specifically, said that these were issues that needed to be discussed by the GNSO as policy. And what did we get? We ended up with, on the... A analysis from the ICANN, the memo, the memo of 20th March 2013 is the one I'm looking at. The element of proposal was referred to the GNSO. The GNSO advised should be a policy discussion. And then straight on goes, having reviewed and balanced all feedback, this looks okay, this appears to be a reasonable add-on, we're going to implement it. ICANN actually sent us a memo saying this should be a GNSO policy discussion. But we're just going to do it without any GNSO policy discussion. We can't, acknowledging the problem does not seem to be enough. We need to actually have some sort of something more than acknowledgement of the problem. The problem is very obvious. Thanks.
Yeah, just on that specific point, I don't think Fatty's in the room, but he did. He's right at the back. Do you want to? I think Fatty did actually answer this question on the weekend. He doesn't want to respond. Okay.
Your next issue.
Well, I could just say two very quick more things. One is, I know that this is not just the NCSG speaking. This is something that we definitely concerned shared with our GNSO colleagues that we've been discussing extensively. The other thing is, if the problem really is that, you know, you're afraid of the years-long PDP, and certainly I think we would be, GNSO would be prepared to discuss ways that we can come up with some multi-stakeholder input more urgently.
I've got Thomas and then Avery.
Yeah, thanks. Just one point I was going to bring up is ICANN published a paper on this topic, and nobody has mentioned it today as far as I can recall. I'm just kind of curious whether people have looked at it and have whether it's viewed as a positive contribution on this. It's on the topic of policy versus implementation, and it explores this space quite a lot of detail.
I'll comment on that because I certainly did read the paper. I thought it was a good contribution. I even commented on it. I certainly don't think it's ready for prime time yet, but it's certainly a good place to start the discussion. It goes into a lot of the issues. I think one of the issues is, and as I mentioned, if you notice when I was speaking, that we sort of go from a place at the beginning where it's mostly policy but somewhat implementation we're talking about from day zero. And at the end, it's mostly implementation, but there is still some policy that we're talking about at the end. And while I don't go as far as Wolfgang has gone in other conversations to say there is no versus, because they are definitely things that are sometimes in contradiction with each other that need to have something arranged, they are two processes that do work together. And I think that paper brings out a lot of interesting things, and it's good to start. One of the things that's not clear to me, first of all, there's two things, and I think it's good that Fadi made a comment and Fadi has taken certain responsibility for things. One, I think that the process precedes Fadi, and I think if we're being fair, he came into an environment where we already had a habit of implementation being jumped at because we didn't want to spend the time in the process, and he came in and just made the process more effective. But I don't think he was the first one to do it. And also, in looking at that paper, while that starts a good discussion, I'm not sure that it solves the problem yet. I don't yet see anything that sort of says, and I'm not going to be able to add another chapter to the end of the list. And I guess one last comment I have to Ray is those things happened in the past, but they aren't all done deals yet.
And, I agree.
Right. So I'm not quite ready to say, you know, it happened and I'm ready to sit with it. I think a lot of those issues, all of those issues.
And I'm not either.
Thank you. So, you know, but that was my last on it. Thanks.
Okay. So I see Mike and I see Bruce, and then we'll move on to the next topic. Okay. Go.
Like, sort of recognizing that mistakes have been made.
I'm sorry, could you speak like closer to the microphone? Thank you.
Sorry, I'm not used to swallowing the mic. Recognizing that mistakes have been made, sometimes out of pure frustration, I think we also have to acknowledge that we generally don't have any stupid people in our staff. And having seen things come and go in other processes, it doesn't necessarily mean that they have to start a process from the beginning just simply because the issue is slightly different, that they actually can take input that's already been given on the same topic previously or on similar and related topics and can consolidate some of that coming into the process going forward. And I think that this suggestion that staff are usurping the process is oftentimes staff actually using a bit of initiative and taking input that has already been obtained and already been given and then extrapolating that into the process, because they're not fools. They're actually cutting out months of work by taking the process going forward, and I think we're being unfair on them by suggesting that's top-down. It's taking bottom-up from a different process and using it as an input into a process that's now ongoing. I don't think staff wake up in the morning and think, how can we upset people today and then make things up?
Thank you, Robin. Just to comment, I think the general theme of your message is consistent that we've heard from every GNSO stakeholder group today. So, you know, I think you can accept the board has heard the concern. I think it's also true that the board recognises that that is an issue. In fact, that's why we're having a session on Wednesday tomorrow on this topic of policy and implementation. And I think the key messages I've heard so far, which I think have been good, which go back to the weekend GNSO Council meeting as well as the stakeholder group meetings, and that is that the GNSO looks at policy and implementation. And then I think what the GNSO constituencies have been sort of, or stakeholder groups have been saying, is that as the policy is implemented at different points, particularly when major changes are being made, it's appropriate to go back to the GNSO and seek some potential, some advice or some feedback. Where we need to work it out end to end, though, is actually make sure we have a clear process and timelines for how that works. Because clearly, you know, the board has asked the staff to implement the GTLD program. At different points, the staff has probably been afraid to send some things back to the GNSO because it feels that that might add 6 months, a year's delay. And so a lot of these things are interdependent. So I think you can lay out a process and say, I think we can all agree that the GNSO stakeholder group should be consulted as the project goes from the high-level policy into the implementation. But at the same time, there needs to be certain commitments from those stakeholder groups to be able to respond in a timely manner so that an overall project can be implemented. So those are sort of the tensions, I think, and hopefully we'll flesh that out some more tomorrow. But just want to be clear where we're hearing you. If you're thinking the board looks a bit passive, it's because it's been hearing this all day and has got the message, and we recognise it's a problem.
Great. Thank you very much, Bruce. I want to turn it over to Wendy to cue us up on the second topic, please.
Great. And accept the revision of the subject to the new GTLD directory services and privacy, because we very much welcome the board's commitment to rethink the provision, the collection and provision of domain name registration data from the ground up and include privacy in that review. Our concern is that the group seems has only one privacy expert on it, and while we very much welcome the input that we're seeing from Stephanie Perrin, it would be problematic if that were the only privacy input. So want to encourage the group and the board, if necessary, to provide avenues for other privacy input as well.
Thank you, Wendy. Ray?
First of all, to your concern, the output of this group is not going to be a policy. It's not going to be a process. It's not going to be a guidebook. It's going to be one thing and one thing only if it's done right and it's able to get to the point. It's going to be information that's going to get fed into the GNSO for policy discussion. Now, this group was formed by the CEO to gather data and gather facts so that issues could be framed. The session was conducted yesterday, and so that other privacy experts, among others, could make comment and put input into the process. There was also an invitation from that group yesterday, and URLs and so forth were presented so that more information could be fed into it. They certainly want to get as much input as they can. As Bertrand pointed out earlier today, this is not a representative group. Everybody can't be representative. It's a multi-stakeholder model. You know, it's not a representative model. And therefore, stakeholders have got to contribute. I would have liked to have been one of the board liaisons to this group, but I wasn't chosen to do so. But I took the avenue that is given to me to make comments, and I spent a lot of time at the microphone yesterday doing so. So I would encourage others to do the same thing. So there's no attempt that's been made here, as far as I can determine, when Fadi put this group together to shut people out or anything else like that. And so take the opportunity to keep on commenting, putting stuff in. You did make some very good contributions yesterday, and I hope they weren't the last ones you're going to make.
Thanks, Ray.
Would anyone else like to speak on this topic?
I guess I can add a little bit. The composition of the expert working group is intended to make sure that we've got the major sources of expertise. It's not a representation or a constituency-driven operation, because the output of it is not a decision. It's not a policy, as Ray said. It's intended to help frame those processes and kick them off in a hopefully in an orderly way. Privacy issues, law enforcement issues, abuse issues, efficiency and cost of operation, various other pragmatic issues, understanding of how registrars operate, understanding how registries operate, understanding the underlying technologies. All of those are important, and all of those are represented in various ways by the people who were chosen. It's only a rough correspondence and not an intent to be a faithful correspondence with the constituencies that we have within the ICANN structure.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, I don't see anyone else in the queue on this, so maybe we can move to the next topic, registrant rights. And Wendy, if you could sort of cue us up on that, I'd appreciate it.
Thanks. We've heard a lot at this meeting about the negotiation of contracts, both the registry agreement and the registrar accreditation agreement. And I understand from the registrars that the registrar accreditation agreement negotiation is relatively concluded. And yet these agreements are the foundations of any rights that registrants have as users of this system, and we've been unrepresented in these negotiations. The attached statement of registrants' rights and responsibilities that was posted along with the most recent draft of the registrar accreditation agreement is a very, very weak statement of rights. The right is apparently the right to know who your registrar is and to see posted terms of service. We think that that needs to be quite a bit stronger as a statement that registrants of domain names have the right to non-discriminatory treatment. Some of these are already in existence in other places in policy. A right to have the name persist until it's suspended with full due process in place. A right to timely transfer and renewal. Rights to privacy in the provision and display of registration data, and no censorship of the domain use or the content or communications there by the contracted parties. And so we think that a much more robust statement of these rights, some of which are guaranteed by underlying law or principles of law or human rights, others of which should be guaranteed through the ICANN process, representing all of those who have interests in the domain name system as a communications platform. And then, along with that, responsibilities of the registrants to help in preventing abuse and to be contactable in the case of problems with their domain names fit naturally. So we think that it will be important for the GNSO Council to review these agreements because of the important policy role that they have, and we look forward to doing that before they become final and binding documents.
Great. Thanks so much for that, Wendy. Do we have any reaction or comments on this topic from anyone? Yes, Kathy.
Kathy Kleiman, and you'll be hearing more from Wendy and from the non-commercial stakeholders group on the registrant rights, because this is very important. And our group is largely registrants. We have a lot of domain names, and these are well thought out ideas that will be coming to you. I want to raise something new based on something I just learned last night, which is that there's a group of registries negotiating the base registry agreement. You can't hear me? Okay, move it closer. Then I'll really be echoing. And there's a group of registries negotiating the base registry agreement, and this seems to me to be a little different than the RAA. The base registry agreement does not have any existing parties on both sides. It's part of the applicant guidebook, and it was negotiated by the community. And to the extent that there are changes being negotiated, that particular team should probably be very diverse. I'd strongly recommend it. You know, if there's a way to encourage it being diverse, that would be very useful, because there are a number of rights involved with it, including registrant rights. And I know that has to go through quickly, and that's going to be going through rapidly. That one really should have representation.
Thanks, Kathy. Wolfgang?
Thank you, Wolfgang Kleinwächter. I want to add one dimension. You know, in the joint meeting between the GNSO Council and the GAC, the chairman of the GNSO Council, Jonathan, said to the GAC that while the governments have a certain responsibility towards the citizens, the GNSO has a special responsibility to the registrants, and we have a shared responsibility here. And because registrants are also citizens, and we have to work hand in hand between the governments and the constituencies of the GNSO Council. This brings me to the point that while the main role of governments with regard to their citizens is just not to give them the rights, but to protect the rights of the citizens. I think this is an important thing, that it's the duty of the governments to protect the rights of the citizens. And if you take this model to the relationship between the registries and registrars and their relationship to registrants, then it's the main or an important task of registries and registrants to protect the rights of the registrants. I think this is the way we should approach it, and we have too less invested in the past to be more clear what are the natural rights of registrants. And so this is a great opportunity to move forward and to add more to the plan to have such a charter. Thank you.
Thank you, Wolfgang. Milton?
Yeah, I'm just going to tie this a little bit to the first topic, the kind of unilateralism. We were kind of baffled or nonplussed when this document came out. It's like, where did this come from? The Registrants' Rights and Responsibilities, 7th March 2013 document. The concept of rights here, really, this clearly was not written by, was not made with any consultation from, or in no way reflects anything that a registrant would actually be interested in. This is about people who want to regulate registrants negotiating with registrar services providers about whatever disputes they have. And I just want to know, how does that happen? Because one of the things about the unilateralism issues is not just that there's a process breakage, but that the process is always broken for the same reasons in ways that serve the same interests. And so here it is again, and it really is a question. It's just, where did this document come from? What were people thinking when they prepared this? And why didn't they actually consult, you know, the people who represent individual rights of registrants in the formation of it?
Thank you, Milton. Do we have any response, anyone who, from board or staff, who could maybe answer the question? Anyone know where the document came from?
Hi, this is Samantha Eisner from staff. The document actually was drafted by the registrars as part of the negotiation. So this document was created by the registrars. That's where it came from. And one of the important things to note about it is that the document actually has, it's tied to specific obligations within the agreement. And so there's a nexus to it. I know we don't have reference to underlying policy or to other legal standards or declarations of human rights, but it's tied to specific obligations in the agreement.
Thanks. If I could just follow up on that, I think that really needs to be made more clear, because it doesn't appear to it appears to portray itself as a list of all of the rights a registrant would have when they register a domain name. But it sounds like you're just saying it's just as pertains to this contract, and I think that's a really important thing to a distinction to make, Wendy.
Just to follow up on that, when I heard Fadi refer to it in the opening ceremony statement, I went to look for what is this exciting document that will present a registrant's bill of rights, and when I found that it was only this white anodyne statement of terms and conditions, I thought we really need the bill of rights document and would be happy to propose one.
Yeah, just to give a little bit of history on it too, Robin, there is actually existing a summary of the rights and responsibilities of registrants. It's actually been on the ICANN website for years, I think. And that was a very legal description of what essentially was in the registrar accreditation agreement as it pertained to registrants. I think the latest draft that's gone ahead with the, well, has been presented with the RAA was an attempt to simplify that a little bit and have something that the intent was that registrars should make it readily available to registrants, etc. But I think the point's rightly made that it is really as it pertains to that agreement, not a wider set. Just a suggestion, if you look at what the GAC did in the early days of looking at both WHOIS and UGTLDs, they developed a set of principles. And one of the things that might be really useful, I guess, on either of the topics on the registrant rights and human rights and so on, would be for the non-commercial constituency perhaps to work with the ALAC and create some principles around registrant rights. And I think if you created those as principles, then those principles could be used when we're looking at the policy development process. So, you know, just something to think about.
Thank you. Okay, not seeing any other hands on this topic. Let's move on to the next topic, human rights and ICANN policy development. And I was going to ask Joy Lidicote if she could get us started on this topic. Thanks.
Thank you, Robin. Joy Lidicote for the record. And just wanting to step back a little, actually, from some of the matters of the day that you've been discussing and take a slightly more strategic look at some of the trajectory of human rights discussion and ICANN. This is sort of to look at some developments that have happened since we last met with the board. And in particular, the independent objector has released a number of public comments in response to the submissions received on new GTLD applicants. And really, we just wanted to reflect back that we've been particularly encouraged by the sort of the quality of the comments that the independent objector has made. We know that this was a particularly experimental mechanism for dealing with public interest objections to new GTLDs. We think that it's quite clear from the independent objector's comments that he's taken very seriously the objections that have been raised. He's applied a broad-based public interest and legal approach to the objections he's been considering. And I think that it's a very helpful contribution to the wider human rights discourse in ICANN, for which perhaps historically there's been a little frisson of fear when the thought of human rights has been raised in relation to the very technical mandate that ICANN has. So We're very encouraged by that. We think it's a good development. We see that there was also a public comment period opened on the closed generics issues. And while our community does have quite divergent views on closed generics, I think nonetheless it was encouraging to see this referred to the independent objector and to have his input into the ongoing community debate. So I really just wanted to reflect that, ask if the board's had any opportunity to look at that at the meta level. I'm not asking the board to comment on particular applications at all, but just sort of that mechanism and how it's working. And I have one follow-up matter, but perhaps just to deal with that one first and open it up for discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joy. Do we have any reactions or comments on this topic, please? Yes, Erica.
It's maybe too broad, my comment, but I think we are in very early phase in understanding all the interconnection between the area of our interest and public interest discussion, closed generic, human rights, even the topics you mentioned before on data privacy relate to it, and many more. I think it's a very, very, very early phase, and like it is always in technology development, when you look back, it's in different other areas. It will be very interesting to see how individual cases will play out. That's why I'm like you. I looked at the objections and the comments from the independent evaluator as well, how he observed this. So I think it will be very interesting how this process will shape out. I mean, there are many, many ways of shaping it in the process. But for me personally, I have a deep interest in the public interest. The question, if one can, for example, define public interest, I do have my doubts. I think there's certain ways of approaching the topic, but to come to a clear definition is probably very hard. The same is very hard with human rights. There's certain connection which are automatically given by law, by international law, for example, when you look into certain definition on privacy rights, there are already some cases on the internet, and when you take international laws into consideration, there are already certain connection made, but in other areas it's probably very, very hard and difficult. So I think it will be, coming back to the point Bruce raised, to the bullet point 3, I think it will be on bullet point 4 important as well, really to define the process very carefully and then to evaluate it. And then I'm sure over a time, you know, we all together will define it. But it will be important and relevant, of course, that you, I mean, you yourself are as concrete as possible and as legal, you know, legally as, you know, as you can be as well. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm very vague, and this defines probably the topic we are talking about to some degree as well.
Walid Al-Sakaf, an ICANN fellow, and netizen. The thing is that in human rights, when we think about it in terms of the owners of domains, like myself, I find that ICANN, although it deals with IPs and domain names and aspects of technical nature, could actually look into the impact that filtering could have on domain owners, particularly when there is lack of transparency. And if we were going to talk about multi-stakeholders, the main biggest chunk of stakeholders are the users. And if we were to look into the interests of users, we need to understand that they need to be informed when they access a website and learn that this website is filtered for a particular reason. So I'd like that ICANN pushes the agenda of transparency and letting users as well as domain owners know that the filtering happened for a legal reason, perhaps, that they're not be in the dark or be misled, because that creates some doubt in the minds of users and owners of domains.
Thank you very much. Steve.
Yeah. This is a difficult area because much of what you've just said focuses on websites. And while domain names are quite commonly used for the addresses of websites. There is a sharp distinction between a domain name and the use of a particular domain name as a support for the web. Domain names are used for email addresses. They're used for service centers, service sites, and all sorts of things. And the this is really a protocol layering issue that I'm alluding to here. It's not the first time that filtering applied to domain names has been used as an attempt to prevent access to websites. A lot of legislative efforts in the U.S. and other parts of the world, and it's quite troublesome because it's the wrong level to get at whatever the issues are.
Thank you, Steve. Any comments, questions? Yes, Joy.
Thanks. No, just as a follow-up, and thanks, Erica, for your comments. I don't think I'm not at all bothered that they were at a particularly high level. I think that's appropriate for a meeting like this. And just really wanted to encourage the board I think that basically those objective comments we've seen so far really strengthen, if you like, the public interest provisions and that were laid out in the guidebook that were so keenly fought over in the community development process of that. And it's interesting that at the end of the day, the independent objector has refused, you know, preliminary decision is not to lodge objections. And I think that's a very rights-affirming approach, and I think it's quite encouraging. So I think that's my view anyway. The only other follow-up I've got is I believe at the last session that NCSG had with the board, there was some discussion about ICANN considering membership or joining the Global Network Initiative, and we're just wondering if there's any update on that. Perhaps, I don't know if Fadi's able to comment on that or not.
Did anyone want to respond?
So, Fadi, that was directed at you, if you want to. I'll ask the embarrassing question. What is the Global Network Initiative?
The Global Network Initiative is basically a consortium of global corporations which have a certain commitment to upholding human rights. It's an initiative that's grown out of the work of John Ruggie, the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and Business. It's a private sector initiative. Particularly for organisations that have sort of public purview, and it's one that seems to sit comfortably in the mandate of a corporation like ICANN. I think we've raised it on a few occasions now, encouraging the board to consider the ICANN's participation in the Global Network Initiative and just really wondering about an update. But I wasn't at the last meeting in Toronto, so perhaps someone else could correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, just a simple question. Is there a written proposal to do this? Because I'm just questioning who would have taken an action to follow up on this?
Rafiq?
Yes, there was discussion in the Toronto meeting, and I think Fadi suggested that he will work on that, but I think there is no update.
I'm not aware that it's a written proposal. I understand it was okay. A verbal exchange with a verbal indication of follow-up. So it's really just an update that we're seeking. That's all.
Mike.
If I may, RCR tends to have about 700 action items around him. Write it down.
Sure, Mike. We'll do that.
Great. Any other comments? Well, we've gone through the issues on our agenda. I thought we've gone through the issues on our agenda. Was there anything, any other issues people wanted to raise? Kathy, was there an issue that you wanted to raise?
I think I already did with the registry,
yes.
Base registry agreement. I just shoved it in there early.
Okay. Thanks. Any other comments? Great. Okay. Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate your time listening to us.
Thank you, Robin.
Yes,
right,
I remember that document.
Oh, hi, nice.
Thank you.
Can I just ask the registrars what they think that it would be?
Yes, yes.
And as such, I would like to direct the group to have the right seats for the GNS to be useful.
Yes.
So as such, I'd like to get your guidance. What is your view, how we should do it?
Oh, okay. Well, and I actually would have wanted to introduce you to Wendy Seltzer here and Kathy Kleiman here, because these guys are the ones who really know this who is privacy issue. And so I think that talking to them would probably be Wendy first.
Hi.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you for your comment yesterday, anyway.
Thank you.
Things were not perfect. We are just going to do our best. Regarding your comment on the reputation of privacy, I think it's a little bit unfair. We get Stephanie.
Yeah.
I think she's very well respected.
Oh, thanks.
And the thing is not to say privacy is 30% important, so we get three people, and then have 15 people, including Steve and Chris, so basically 13, and me, that's 12. So, I mean, and this is not viewed as a representative way of doing things.
I think
just like we often try to do our the issue, work on this one, and it's in the view of the general interest of everything to find a solution. Because up to now, when that's happened, is people came with definition.
Right. I appreciate that it's not a representative body, and I was, you know, merely suggesting that in the cases where Stephanie doesn't know everything there is to say about privacy, we might explore other avenues to get privacy input.
Then I invite everyone to comment. So we have an open event. This will be examined for sure. Have no other agenda to be used. Okay?
Yes.
That's all what I'm trying to do.
Wonderful. And so I look forward to sending.
And Stephanie, I gave her probably 50% of the data. So she gets much, much more than if there were already six people into the group.
Yes. I appreciate that, because
you can blame me on many things, but not on this one.
Good.
And I would like to seek your insight on how do you think we should end up with, because, you know, we have this EWG, which is just to pre-digest, pre-choose the issues, format that in the way it can be transferred in a useful manner to GMSO. The last thing we want to do is we work very hard and we take it here and then people say, that's it, finish, don't do it. So how can we be useful? Or more useful in the formatting, the approach, whatever.
Well, I think that we